Thank you so much for talking with me today. I'm really so happy that you wanted to take time. And more than that, I'm just over the moon that you are on the radio and that they have you there.
Thank you. All right, Boo Boo. Now, in the past year, which is really interesting, you've primarily done solo concerts. You've also released another solo CD that was last year. What prompted the change from the piano trios that you've been associated with?
Well, I've so enjoyed performing primarily, as you said, piano, bass, drums, instrumental format for decades. I'm sure that's what I was doing when you and I met. And I love the trio. Over the years, I had sporadic opportunities to play solo concerts. And each time that I did, I so enjoyed it, and I felt that the audience enjoyed it. And I wanted to explore it more. For those first few decades of my career, I always had representation, like a manager. And rather than really taking charge of my interest in pursuing a solo direction, I sort of let just the established tenets that had come into place in my career, involving playing in a trio and kind of being billed as the Benny Green Trio. And that being known as an entity, it was a blessing. But looking back on my life in general, there have been times where I felt a kind of calling to do something, but for whatever reasons, just kind of went along with what I felt was expected of me. So, when the pandemic hit for every one of us, it presented an opportunity to kind of reevaluate our lives and the shape of our lives and our lives' activities at the moment that we all got quarantined, and I think we all maybe had a chance to reconsider what things we wanted to change and what things we wanted to hold on to, what things we wanted to let go of, et cetera. So it kind of happened circumstantially. I was alone, me and my piano, and wanting to play and still wanting to feel connected with people. So I started sharing some very short solo piano videos just from home on my Facebook. And I was really happy to see that some of my friends and also some of my colleagues were encouraging. I think we all needed some encouragement while we were in lockdown. So as I was home playing by myself, I realized more than ever before how very inviting it is and how liberating it is to play alone. There's so many wonderful things that a pianist can get to with a trio that aren't the same when playing solo, but I find that if the artist can conceive of something, it can be achieved. So I feel like I'm just getting started in my exploration as a solo pianist, Kim.
Oh, wow.
But at this stage of my life, I am letting go of a lot of preconceptions that I've held on to about what I should be doing and tuning more into what feels natural for me. So it's a pretty deep experience for me just working with the piano and not having other people to negotiate with about my choices, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. It makes the thing about solo piano, and I mentioned this to our hero, Kenny Barron, you're kind of put out there. You're vulnerable. It's almost like being on stage, naked or something like that.
Completely exposed.
Exactly.
And the audience, as far as I'm concerned, whether I know the people in the audience or not, the audience is supremely intelligent and they've heard the piano played before. And at this time in my life, I'm really not out to prove anything. I really do believe there's, relative stages of life for an individual. And when we're younger, a lot of young players, I know I was there, a person has something to prove of themselves. You want recognition and you want cats to feel like you can play and you got something to prove. And I think hopefully as one goes through life and has more experiences and gets as the saying goes, more comfortable in their own skin, I'm not out to try to prove anything. And more specifically, I'm not out to try to compete with myself or compete against other musicians. I can really enjoy listening to almost anyone play the piano now and dig something about it. And believe me, Kim, I had such critical filters in place that I'd held on to, but a lot of them had been fed to me by other people, that really inhibited my being able to just enjoy someone else doing what they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kind of critical filters where I'd be comparing and contrasting instead of just enjoying somebody making a, you know, beautiful noise on their own terms. So this is a stage in my life where I'm really looking to refine much more so than expand.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, as you said, when you spoke of the vulnerability of playing any instrument alone in front of an audience, I love honesty, and I'm really, honesty is not something I'm afraid of. I think a person can become self-deluded, and waking up out of self-delusion, that can be very uncomfortable. But I'm aware when I'm playing solo piano that the audience has a choice. If they want to hear the piano played other ways than what it is that I'm reaching for, they have that choice. And that brings me a peacefulness, whereas a younger person sometimes may feel a kind of pressure to be able to do everything. And I feel very liberated from that in this stage of life.
And it's just interesting hearing you talk about being competitive and whatnot, because I have never perceived you that way. You've always been just so even, just so mellow. You know, I've just never perceived you as never. And I know a lot of musicians, and I know how musicians talk about each other behind closed doors. But I've never had the sense that you have been competitive. When I think about some of the people that you've performed with, other piano players,
I've just been around him in so many contexts.
Yeah.
Not to overshare, I saw Kenny a couple weeks ago. We were in New York.
You were playing together, weren't you?
That's correct. Yeah. Presentation that a wonderful Aaron Deal put together, speaking of wonderful young pianists.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were parting, Kenny asked about my wife, Sophie. He said, how's Sophia? And I told him that she's on vacation with her family in San Juan. And then I just said, this speaks to the truth of Kenny's gentle spirit, Kim. I just said in passing, I said a cliche. I said, well, it was probably good for her to get a little break from my crazy. And I just said that. And then Kenny, I actually saw his face. He kind of softened, almost as if to say, oh no, don't speak of yourself in such a way. And it was an actual reaction. I just saw his face simply because I said, oh, it'll be good for her to get a break from my crazy. Like, he didn't even want me speaking of myself that way. Was his, like, he had a visceral reaction. And I'm saying that's how sensitive he is in the music.
He is.
And it was unthinking for me. Like I said, it's a cliche just to say that. But if I just kind of hit pause and go into it, like, vertically, yeah, I can learn something from Kenny's reaction. So I want to say his being represents such a great teacher in so many ways.
Yes. To the outsider, it seems like you have been blessed with almost a charmed career. I mean, you work with Betty Carter, Art Blakey, Freddie Hubbard, Oscar Peterson, Ray Brown. I'm just scratching the surface. Have you ever thought about what it was that attracted them to your talent and made them hire you?
I think about it more as I get older, because there certainly were other young hotshot piano players at the time that I was coming up. And I have to say, it goes, for me, it starts from the beginning with my father introducing me to the music in a way that set me up for the way that Phil Hardiman, who taught us kids about jazz here in Berkeley in the public schools, beginning at the age of 9 in fourth grade level all the way up through high school, he taught us about the music. But prior to meeting Mr. Hardiman and kids my own age learning about this kind of music, my father introduced me to it. We were listening to Thelonious Monk and Charlie Parker records together, Ray Charles, Billie Holiday. And my father gave me a foundation, not only hearing the great music, but as soon as he saw that I was interested in it, he told me that he wanted me to understand, as he put it, Kim, he said, this is Black people's music. And that doesn't mean that you and I can't enjoy it. He said, in fact, he said, there are some white people that can really play the music well. He said, but the ones who can are basically imitating something that Black people created. And Kim, this is the very first thing my father told me about the music. And then just a year or two later, when I entered Longfellow Elementary School here in Berkeley, met Mr. Hardiman and kids my own age, getting their feet wet playing this music. A lot of these kids who I was meeting became my friends, were products of the Black church. And so even though I don't come from that culture, from a very early age, it was presented to me that the music is a cultural art form, which I'm just ever grateful for, that that's my foundation. I didn't find that out after the fact. That was like, before I was learning about any notes, my father just dropped it on me, and that was him being my dad, looking out for me, wanting the best for me, just at the beginning of my path in the music.
You know, something else I'd like to note, that you are an exceptional writer. So often you've been sharing your experiences as a professional musician and just these incredible anecdotes and stories about some of the amazing people that you met and performed with on your Facebook page. Tell us about, do you have plans to write a book?
Yeah, thanks for asking, Kim. I'm in the process of it. I'm in the thick of it. The thing is, my book is actually compiled. It's got a form and structure, and I feel good about this. What I'm in the midst of is layers of editing. I've been working, I haven't for the past few months, but in the past couple of years, I've employed a very wonderful literary editor who's been great. But my self-editing right now, I have pieces here. I can tell you right now, my book begins with a whole chapter just about growing up in Berkeley, the people here who helped me. And then it goes to when I moved back to New York at 19 and people who I met there who helped me, before the next chapter, which is about joining Betty Carter, about playing with Betty. So in this chapter about returning to New York before I joined Betty, one of the people I'm writing about is our friend who's yet to be made an NEA jazz master, which needs to be rectified, by the way, the great Bobby Watson. I remember when I moved to New York, I was 19, met Walter Bishop Jr., God bless him, he took me under his wing, and he said, you're 19, you can play, you're new to town, great, get in line. You dig him. That's real.
Yeah, around that time, oh man, just the people that were on the scene around that time, he was accurate.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
We'll see, the cross-generational thing was still so strong because so many second and third generation masters were still with us, like still strong in their primes, leading bands, and digging young cats to hire for their groups. And so it gave us, where today kids have a TikTok and Instagram to hang out in, we would be hanging out in the clubs wanting the older cats to approve of us enough to like have us sit in and dig what we play when we sit in enough to maybe give us a gig. That was our sense of relevance.
Now, to kind of wrap this up, what are you working on in the future?
I would have to tell you from the future. No, I know what you meant, though. I'm just messing with you. What am I working towards? Honestly, I'm working on my book in terms of a project, so to speak. That's something that's very specific. It's an arduous process because sometimes I get disgusted with my own self, with my own writing, and I have to just like take a break and step away. Mm. Oh, so the reason I brought up Bobby Watson is, there's a piece just about Bobby, about meeting him, how he helped me. And I have written and rewritten this piece and edited the current iteration of it, say 30 times. And I'm still not satisfied. The information is there, but I'm still not signed off on just my voice, how I'm putting things. And so, but that's what's next up. It's very important to me. Some musicians, like Billy Childs, can they write symphonies and concertos? And I don't know that that's really in the calling for me. So my book is my symphony. And I really want to thank you not only for chatting with me today, but also I want to thank you for asking about my book and encouraging my writing, as you've done, Kim. You know, I'm really grateful to have you in my Amen Corner.
Likewise.
And thank you for what you're doing on the radio. We're so grateful to have you, Kim Berry.
I appreciate that, and I appreciate you. Yeah. Thanks again. It's in a way, it's kind of weird, like interviewing you, because we talk so much, just about everything. So we're looking forward to seeing you.
I'm so looking forward to seeing you.
All right, sweetheart.
Bless you, Kim. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.